Thank you, everybody, for downloading episode 3 of Entertainment Today. To start off, we're going to have a little PSA from Liz Eidenbach. So I'm going to throw it to her. Liz, please.
Thank you, David.
You're welcome.
I would first like to start off today's episode by sincerely apologizing to all of Scotland, all of the Actors Guild, and all of the world. It is not fair what I had previously said. I don't know how I could ever think that a 7-times Bonds man.
Yes. It's okay. Take your time.
I know.
Take your time.
That someone who is an extraordinary gentleman, who is untouchable, who has the heart of a dragon, and most importantly, is the father of Indiana Jones, could ever be so easily just taken out.
Murdered,
assassinated.
Yeah. Yes.
You know, even with my killer ninja skills, I still would not be able to do that so easily. So to our sexiest man alive, well, back in 1989 at least. And, you know, honestly, for his age and till his true end of days, he probably always will be. Sean Connery, I sincerely apologize for taking you out verbally, but not physically.
That's genuine. There's no way he wouldn't accept that apology.
I hope so.
Liz, that was very, very brave of you.
I agree. Thank you.
It took a lot of guts and just big beach ball size balls from you.
Yeah, lady nuts.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, hopefully, the whole Hollywood and movie industry will find it in their hearts to forgive you for killing off a living legend.
I know.
All right. So, thank you. Thank you again. All right, guys. Thank you for downloading episode 3 of Headline News. I'm still trying to find an opening for this. I'm still trying to come in, you know, trying to find something here. I don't know.
Headline News?
What's that?
Did you just say Headline News?
Oh, did I say Headline News? Oh, this is Entertainment Today. That's my other show. I'm so sorry.
Oh, man.
Thank you.
Oh, wow.
Entertainment Today. I'm sorry. We can edit that out in post. Thank you. Mm-hmm. Entertainment Today. This is, yeah, I know. I just messed that one up completely.
Even
maybe I should apologize too. How about that? Entertainment Today. There it is. Yeah, thank you for downloading episode 3 of Entertainment Today. I am David Banks, joined here of always. To my left, we have the lovely Liz Eidenbach. How you doing, Liz?
I'm great.
I'm fine. To my right, we have the always beautiful and always elegant, just fresh off vacation,
fresh off of
a cold, Megan
yes.
Splinkle. How you
Hello.
Doing?
Hello, I'm doing all right. It's good to be back home.
Oh, yeah. We're glad to have you back home.
Thank you.
And joining us, we have a very special guest for this particular episode. He's a friend of JL Media Today, a friend of the show, and a friend of mine. He's been on various other podcasts. He is one half of the boys of Cult Cinema Cavalcade. And if you remember from episode 1, I called him my Yoda. So please welcome Aww. Mr. Brandon Peters.
Yay. Hello.
Hi, everybody.
Thank you, Brandon.
Thanks for having me.
Well, thank you for coming on, man. I really do appreciate that. We're going to have a...
I didn't get called lovely, though. I don't know.
But aren't you, though? Isn't he, though?
Yeah.
Well, you are lovely. Yeah, yes. You're literally sitting right across from me.
Yes, the
right
lovely
now.
Man across from
yeah,
me.
And yeah, I'm like... just lost in your pretty blue eyes or
Aww.
Brown eyes or whatever.
Mm-hmm. He doesn't.
They're green, actually.
The green eyes.
Yeah. Obviously.
They're
whatever. I got sight. Both contacts in one eye, so I'm sorry. Anyway, we have a huge, 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 huge show for you guys. We're going to talk about Alien, the whole franchise of Aliens. As you know, Alien Covenant, as when this show is going to be released, the Alien Covenant will already be released. And so we're going to talk about the franchise. We're going to talk about the history of Alien. And so that's why I wanted Brandon to come aboard here, and because he's very knowledgeable of the franchise. and so to give his input and knowledge. So what we're going to do, guys, we're going to get all the important stuff out the way first. So right now, I'm going to turn it over to Megan, and she's going to tell us about the news.
Fill you in on some stuff. Always have some DC news, something coming out of there. So the cinematic universe has been on a roller coaster of ups and downs, especially with their movie The Flash, which is experiencing more downs than ups. So we found out on Wednesday that Billy Crudup has dropped out of the production, and it's slowing the momentum. But according to sources close to the production and Crudup's camp, the actor is still firmly on board to play the father of Barry Allen. So the studio appears to be narrowing its hunt and meeting with high-end directors such as Robert Zemeckis and Matthew Vaughn. And Zemeckis is appearing to be the front runner at this moment. I like The Flash. I want to see this.
I mean, he is, well, let's just say it's very different from the TV show Flash.
Yeah.
I don't know why they didn't pick the guy who played, what's his name?
Ezra Miller?
No, it played in the TV show.
Grant Gustin?
Grant Gustin.
Yeah.
Don't know why they didn't choose him. If anybody has watched the TV show The Flash on the CW, you should check it out. It's a really, really good show.
Yeah. It's a multiverse thing. They want to keep them separate.
Yeah, I don't understand that though. But anyway, I was very excited when I heard Robert Zemeckis' name attached to this project.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, he's done Back to the Future, Forrest Gump, The Polar Express. You know, he's done a ton of big blockbuster movies, and I was very excited to hear his name attached to it. And but it seems like that movie is, like you said, roller coasters of ups
cursed.
And down.
Yeah.
Cursed. Thank
I
you.
I mean, this is their. They've had two or three directors already, and then now there's this.
I actually heard Sam Raimi's name attached to
he
this.
He was, and him and Mark Webb.
But he dropped. But they dropped out, didn't they?
Both Spider-Man directors, and they. Yeah, much. Thankfully, no Mark Webb. I wasn't a fan of.
You're not a fan of Mark Webb?
Is he the Amazing Spider-Man? Okay, so I like those ones.
I like really the cast do. Of them. I just, yeah. I don't, I did, I, most of my problems came from his direction. So,
oh, okay. So,
I had no problem. I thought Andrew Garfield was great. I thought Emma Stone. I love that whole cast, but I just wanted better movie. Well, I didn't think the second one I was okay with. It was the first one I was just like, I could tell it was like a post production mess. So
I'm the total opposite. I like the Amazing Spider Man. I didn't like the Amazing Spider Man 2. Yeah,
it was,
but it's
it was
just
like,
me.
It was like Batman Forever, but with Spider Man. It felt like it was like, you know, it felt like it was in the vein of that rather than modern superheroes for me. But.
Okay, well, we're going to move on. I like this one. So, Roseanne is definitely coming back with 8 episodes, which isn't nearly enough. But. Looks like there's a fight between ABC and Netflix, so we don't know where she's going to air yet, but looks like the whole cast is coming back, including both Beckys.
And will it be Zombie Dan or Ghost Dan?
Oh, no.
Right?
It's airing on both.
Okay. No. It's going to be on ABC.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah. ABC got it. Okay. Netflix and ABC was battling for it, for the rights. Yeah.
Right on. So ABC. So everybody, you know.
Yeah, Ghost Dan is a
Ghost Dan or Zombie Dan, one of the two.
I was very confused because I remember watching the episode and I was like, I thought he, you know, he did die.
Yeah.
But then they won the lottery or something,
and that was all like part of a book she was writing. It was
really
that last season didn't exist.
It was all a book.
So it was basically like Bobby in Dallas, right? The whole thing.
It was
the
season,
whole season
with Ernest when they had Jim Varney as that rich prince that liked Jackie.
Oh, yeah.
It was. They were out of gas. That's pretty much, you know,
right.
Goodman had left the show, and it was they were out of gas.
I thought it was a cool kind of.
Didn't he come back for the last episode though?
They might have had like a flashback or something.
Yeah.
But then she mentioned in the epilogue that he passed away.
And everybody lost it.
Gotcha.
Well, Beckys, both
Beckys.
And so that's kind of funny because there's that scene where Dan's playing DJ as an adult and he's all messed up in the head and he's saying, they say she's the same, but she's not the same. They say she's, and he's talking about Becky and nobody knows what he's talking about. So that's going to be funny to see how they incorporate both those Beckys.
I think the I can't remember her name, the girl who played The second Becky.
Sarah Chalk.
Yes.
That's my favorite Becky.
That's your favorite Becky?
Oh, yeah.
I had a mad crush on Sarah Chalk.
Yeah. Did you?
She's on Scrubs and, yeah.
I think she's going to play a different part, though. I don't know exactly. Yeah, she's going to play a different part. Okay.
It'll be good. I'm excited about that one. Okay, so Michael Moore and Harvey Weinstein. Steen. Okay. Will team up again for a Trump documentary called Fahrenheit 11/9. Moore has reunited with his team from Fahrenheit 9/11 and made the announcement Tuesday, saying filming has been done under strict cloak of secrecy and is aimed at dissolving Trump's Teflon shield and his presidency. They're looking for both international and domestic distribution this week at the Cannes Film Festival.
Did anybody watch Fahrenheit 9/11?
Yeah.
God,
it's been a while.
Did you like it?
Oh, what? There I am.
Yeah, 9/11.
There I am.
Here I am, too.
Yeah.
That's why I haven't been talking. I'm like, well, you can't hear me, so.
I see what you guys are doing. We'll just turn off their mics.
Right.
And,
well, you know.
This is your punishment for killing Sean Connery.
Yeah, there you go. There you go.
And I guess I did nothing, so there's that guilty by association,
guilty
kids. It's
birds
true. It's true. Anyway.
I'm actually excited for that. I want to see that. I like Michael Moore's documentaries.
I do, too.
Fahrenheit 9/11, I really did enjoy.
Bowling for Columbine.
Yeah. Bowling for Columbine. Yeah.
All that stuff that's Roger really hard to watch, but you have to, you know.
Where to Attack Next. I think that's another one. Yeah. So I'm interested in seeing with him and the former head of Miramax, Harvey Weinstein, will do with Fahrenheit 11/9 now.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's cool.
I'll definitely watch that. We don't want to talk about it too much, though. That starts to be political.
Venture off into the
when we all agree that's
political
right.
world.
Right. I think we'd all agree at this table.
I think
least.
So.
Okay. So finally, we got some sad news.
Yeah,
so,
who died?
Yeah, it looks like Michael Parks passed away on May 10th, and he's got over 100 credits from film and TV. He was in movies like Dusk Till Dawn, Kill Bill, Red State, and Tusk. He was 77 years old. May 15th, Powers Booth passed away, and he starred in films such as Sudden Death and Sin City, and TV shows like Deadwood, 24, and Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., and he was 68.
That was his last acting credit, was Agents. That's what he was on most recently, I believe.
Okay. He was like a recurring, I think did he get killed off there a couple of years ago, maybe?
Did he? I haven't been.
I gave up on the show.
Yeah, me too. I haven't. After the first season,
I thought I saw him get axed before I was done with it.
Probably. I mean, well, he's axed now. So,
but he was.
You think?
So, yeah,
he was Jean-Claude Van Damme's Hans Gruber.
He was
in Sudden Death. Which, if you haven't seen that movie, it has Jean-Claude Van Damme fighting a mascot in a kitchen at a hockey stadium.
You have to watch that show.
It's awesome.
That movie is great.
Yeah.
Well, and then most recently, this one shocked so many people around the world. Chris Cornell from Soundgarden was 52, and he was found in a Detroit bathroom at the MGM Grand, and it turns out he hanged himself, and he was found by one of his friends. And it shocked everybody around him, too, because he had been sober for a while and appeared to be happy. So
that literally happened today. You know, we're recording this May 18th.
Right.
So literally we just got the news today.
Mm-hmm. And he had performed less than 12 hours before that in Detroit. So.
He was on tour with Soundgarden. They was here last week.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. They performed here in the city last week. So, and he had a tweet like, a few hours before his death.
Excited to be in the Motor City.
Yeah.
Something like that.
Yeah. That's sad.
It's crazy because you get like, he's like one of the founding fathers of grunge, and like they're all like dead by suicide. You have like Kurt Cobain, the obvious one, Layne Staley of Alice in Chains, and then Andrew Wood of Mother Love Bone, which was the precursor to Pearl Jam before they had Eddie Vedder. The lead singer was Andrew Wood.
Oh, really?
And he's the first one to commit suicide. And then, you know, now you have Chris Cornell, and it's like, wow.
It's
kind of weird.
Yeah.
I was never into the grunge scene.
That's not surprising.
No, of course not. I just know the usual suspects, mm-hmm. Nirvana, Pearl Jam, that sort of thing. Yeah. I mean, I remember the name Soundgarden. I just wasn't too
they
familiar.
They never took off. They were like one of the big, like in the original Crux of Things, they were one of the big ones. And they had success. It's not like they didn't have success.
Yeah.
We all know who Soundgarden is.
Right.
We know who Chris Cornell is, but they didn't take off. Like Nirvana, when Nirvana was, you know, done, they were supposed to just take the mantle on, and they just didn't really jump that. But, I mean, they had huge, like, Black Hole Sun. That was, like, one of those.
That's one of my favorite songs.
It was, one of those great, like, MTV videos where you're like, oh, that's cool.
The
and then they're showing it every 45 minutes on MTV, and you're like, I hate Black Hole Sun now. Like, TLC's Waterfalls. Like, it was cool the first time today. MTV and then VH1's like, we like this one too.
It's so like visually striking, you know, and it just kind of like stuck with you and all of these.
I still love
faces.
The song though. Oh, like when I listen to X103 or I don't know what other radio stations play it. Yeah. I don't think any. I think X103 is the only one. Yeah. But I'll still like turn it up. My kids will be like, Mom, and I'm like, no, shut up.
Yeah.
Mm-mm. And they got like the Spoon Man, like you know all their songs, like Fell in Black Days. Like I just like. They have tons of stuff. And they broke up, and they were not together, so he went, and him and Rage Against the Machine members formed Audioslave.
Which was awesome.
Yeah, he had a solo career. He wrote a James Bond song for Casino Royale.
Yes, he did.
But, yeah, it's, sad. It's crazy.
Right.
Well, we all know that his catalog will be getting a lot of hits nowadays.
Well, yeah, just thinking about all those people's families and everybody out there.
He was married. I think he had, what, three kids? What was it, three kids, I believe?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they had just, like, settled down in Florida. Not just, but we're in Florida, and seemed happy. Okay, well.
Going back to Michael Parks.
Oh, yes, I was just going
one
back
of the,
to him.
Yeah, one of the greatest actors to ever, like, carry on different accents. Like, you would never. He played two parts in Kill Bill. He played the sheriff that was all like this. And then he played the Spaniard guy that was like, talk like this.
Yeah, who was like the father figure for
Bill.
You
wouldn't even know the same guy. What? And then he did a little stint on Twin Peaks in the second season where he played this Frenchman. And just he's so natural coming out with it. And, like, all his accents are just it's crazy. Like, that's probably, like, the best thing about him. I mean, like, he was a great actor, period. But, like, that was one of the skills that he had over, like, anyone else.
It was like the same sheriff he played in Kill Bill was the same sheriff he played in From Dusk Till Dawn.
Mm-hmm.
And it was right at the beginning of that movie.
And he showed up in Planet Terror.
Yeah, he showed up in Planet Terror also. He was a staple for Quentin Tarantino. But if you haven't seen Red State, it's a Kevin Smith film. It was a little film.
Skip to his sermon and then skip the rest of the movie.
Oh, I enjoyed the whole movie. I loved the whole movie. I think that's one of Kevin Smith's best work was that movie. But if you haven't seen this Michael Parks in that film, I suggest you find it and check it out because he is phenomenal.
Him and Goodman are very good in that movie. Yes. But, man,
I enjoyed Red State. I have to admit, I did. I did. Better,
there's many people did.
Better than Tusk.
Oh.
All right, guys. Well, we're going to move right along because, like I said, we got a big show today. So I'm going to hand it over to Liz, and she's going to give us some little info on some hidden gems and movie of the week. So what you got there, Liz?
Well, one, I guess, hidden gem or movie of the week. I guess we're going to go way back. I don't even know the year because I didn't write it down. But this is really old. But it's a foreign film.
Okay.
And only reason I
Subtitles.
Realized... It is subtitles, and I only realized that because when I got it from Netflix back in the day when Netflix would send out the DVDs, so this is how I remember that it's old, is that I didn't realize it until I got the DVD and I stuck it in. I'm like, oh, this is in Spanish.
Oh, well.
And I'm not that. I don't know enough Spanish to not need subtitles, but it's still a really good movie. It's called Pan's Labyrinth. It's really dark. It's a very, very dark film.
That's a Guillermo del Toro movie.
I don't know that's hidden.
No.
I don't think that's hidden. Well, it's not hidden.
I had an Academy Award nominated.
Well, I mean, it's not hidden, but I'm just saying it's older, so people wouldn't.
I did
think
not
about
know
it
you was going to pick that one, really.
Oh, yeah. I know, because I couldn't remember the name when we were talking about it earlier.
Oh, my God.
It's not hidden. I just mean it's
that's
not like
a real
something
good
that
film.
People would. I know, it's awesome film.
I'll go backward with you, though. I'll take you from there, and we'll go to The Devil's Backbone, which is from 2001, which is on the same thematics as Pan's Labyrinth, and then all the way back to Kronos, which is a vampire movie. Which is one of the first in these kind of like trilogy that he did, like Spanish, like fairy tale things.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, I need to look into this.
Pan's Labyrinth.
I've heard Pan's Labyrinth is phenomenal.
Yeah. It's a good film. Yeah,
yeah.
It's real good film.
Fantasy.
But watch it in Spanish with subtitles. That's the original audio. That's the way to go.
Yeah, I would do that.
No, absolutely. I don't like dubbed over films. Mm-hmm. So even when I'm watching, which we'll get to anime here in a minute. But so even when I'm watching like my kung fu movies and my crazy stuff the kids can't stand. Though they love the anime, but they can't stand my kung fu movies. But I don't like dubbed over because I get distracted by the lips not matching.
Right.
So I have to have the subtitles.
Yep.
But
I'm with you.
Yeah. So I guess hidden gem, I was just thinking like it's not something you would think of because it is an older film.
It's 11 years old. Yeah.
It is.
It's crazy.
It's quite a while, and so people wouldn't think of it. So.
I think it was released in a very limited capacity, mm-hmm. but like Brandon said, it was nominated for an Oscar. I mean,
multiple. It won some. I think. It was up for Best for Foreign Language Film. Many were mad that it wasn't up for Best Picture.
Yeah.
It didn't win Best Foreign Film, which was the craziest.
Yeah. Oh, it didn't. I thought it did. No, okay.
That was a big upset. It was up for some like design and costuming stuff as well.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
But
it visually is breathtaking.
It is. It's just overall, it's a really good film.
No,
I mean,
it's
like I said, it's dark, but the story is so good, and like you're watching it and you're like, oh my god, and you like have all these emotions going on, but you're following
Ophelia,
thank you. I want to say Sophia, but I was thinking of something else. But you're following Ophelia, and you're like, you really feel like, oh my god, I can't believe this is going on, and you're watching her, and you're like, I want to be there, and you're like, I know the whole thing, like the story is just engulfing, and you can completely like believe the fantasy portion with her. Like, it's awesome.
It's got great violence, great character. Like, mm-hmm. what I mean by great violence is
it makes sense.
It's effective. Like, mm-hmm. It hurts you to watch something painful happen to somebody, which is a real talent to have.
It takes you on a wild ride. Good.
Yes,
man.
And the ending as well, you feel like that. I don't want to.
No spoilers.
It's not a spoiler, but you feel that justice at the end.
It's got a top 10 villain of like that whole decade too, with the general. He's just a bastard. Like, I mean, you just wanna, but yeah, it's. Oh, I love Pan's Labyrinth. I was very much. I think I'm. Is that my favorite film of that year? I can't remember. It was a good year. I think that.
What year was that again?
Yeah. Oh, did that come out with No Country and stuff? I can't remember. It was 06 or 07.
I can look it up.
Okay. I think. I can't remember. Anyway, what else you got, Liz? Pan's Labyrinth. Real quick.
Labyrinth de la Fauna.
Yes. If anybody has not seen Pan's Labyrinth, I suggest you go check it out. Mm-hmm. Find it somewhere. Order it from Amazon. Go to your local whatever.
Place you where you anything. Go to TVs. Yeah, just about anything. Just Amazon. I don't know if it's on Netflix anymore. No, it used to be.
It's not. No.
Okay, it's not.
Criterion
and then
Collection Blu-ray is the way to go.
Yeah.
We're going to talk about that. We're going to get to that.
And of course, Fire Stick, all those other things. It's all out there. So any of those services.
Go find it.
Of them, it's going to be out there.
All right, what else you got?
Okay, so the next one, again, probably isn't a hidden gem, but it's one of my favorites.
Is this an anime?
It is an anime
movie.
This is a movie.
I'll take your word for it.
This is all you.
So this is a Miyazaki film. He's known for his anime movies. It's Howl's Moving Castle. Again, I didn't write the year down. I'm bad about that. But I think this is an early 2000s film. But this one is an animated. Well, obviously, it's anime. Duh. Just said that. but it's one of my favorites. In fact, well, I think all of my Miyazaki films are my favorite. I don't really have a favorite. But all of his films are really good. They all have a meaning. They all have like a, you know, different lessons that you learn throughout. And then, of course, just his animation, and it's just really good, and the style is awesome. But Howl's Moving Castle, it's just, I don't know, there's so many different stories within the story, and this is just one of my favorite. I think it's one of my first Miyazaki films that I saw, which attracted me to his films, which then led me on to the rest of his, as well as my kids. So my oldest son, we both of us can sit down and watch all of his films over and over and over again. This one in particular is a young girl works at her father's hat shop. I think it takes place in like old England. I don't know. It's really hard to tell. But essentially, Hal is this wizard. He befriends Sophie, who's like kind of the main character. And there is a witch, Witch of the Waste. And she gets jealous because she's constantly chasing Hal. And so she curses Sophie with old age. And so the whole story is, so Sophie as an older woman, basically with Hal in his moving castle, hence the name, and they go on all these adventures essentially, and it's just lessons of friendship and, you know, finding your self-worth and love. There's, of course, a love story.
You are really getting deep into this.
I'm just saying, I love his. I could talk about all of them. I could probably spend a whole hour on each of his movies.
You are really getting deep. I was letting her go, man. She was actually
I know. I'm just saying. I was almost done anyway because I was down to my last thingy. Okay. But all of his, they're really good. They have really good lessons and really good stories. And
good family flick.
It is.
What's the name of the movie?
This one is Howl's, Howl.
Okay. Howl's Moving Castle.
And it's anime. So if you're into anime, or if you haven't been into anime, you haven't seen any anime.
Well, people, the Miyazaki films, I wouldn't, like, they are anime, but, like, people who don't like anime get really into those. Yes. So, yeah. I mean, they're almost.
And this one's English.
They're like Japan's, like, Disney, Pixar type. Mm-hmm. You know, not the style of animation, but that's the people that go for those kind of movies.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, this one's actually in English, and I think the Howl actually is voiced by Christian Bale. So this is.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, so this one's English. Cool. Specifically,
where's the trigger?
Yeah,
where's
no, trigger? Not that, not that.
Oh God!
Nice,
on.
Very
where's
cute. You know,
where's my moving castle?
Lighthearted. I didn't even recognize his voice honestly until I was looking at Ben for me. I was like, oh really? I had
he
to
does
think about
other
that one.
Ones than Batman,
right? Than the overly
a less angry Christian Bale.
Yeah, dark or try. You know,
if I could do angry Christian Bale, I would do it now, but I can't.
I love the scene in Neighbors when they're like, "Who's your Batman?" He's like, "Hey. This is my Batman." And he's like, I'm counting on it.
I'm Batman. I'm Batman.
No,
I'm Batman.
No, what's up? I'm Batman.
Oh, man. Love All it. Right. Cool. Well, thank you, Liz. I appreciate that.
Hey, anytime.
Good little information.
Anytime
now,
you want to know anime, just let me know.
Gems.
I love there, that. We do.
We do need a jingle for this.
We should.
We
hey,
do need a jingle for
I'll
this.
Go, I'll work on that.
All right. There we go.
It's like Megan. Boom, 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 boom. And the news.
Yeah, that's a good idea. We do need something for these little segments.
I come up with jingles when I'm on Johnny's show all the time.
Side job.
JL Media today.
Yes.
He still hasn't used it.
He still hasn't.
Because he'll owe me money if he uses it.
Yeah. All right, well, let's get into the meat and potatoes of this episode, guys. Like I said before at the beginning of this episode, Alien Covenant will have already been released. I am predicting right now it's going to be a huge movie. So if you've seen it already, as of this recording, if you've seen it already, please get on our Facebook page at Entertainment Today on Facebook and leave your comments and everything. But we're going to start off giving our history of the franchise of Alien. As you know, the very first Alien movie came out in 1979.
Yep, before I was born.
Before I was born, too.
Yeah.
I know, before
definitely.
All of
my parents
before
might have
I
been
born.
Thinking about me at that time.
My
they
mother
might have been thinking
was,
about having me.
I was being conceived.
Okay, Megan, you need to quit making a sound old. Every time we say something, here's Megan. I was like 3 months old. My
damn
mom
you, Megan.
Was two.
I was on the tee.
No. Damn you, Megan.
I know, right?
So,
sorry, guys.
So in 1979, I think by Fox, by the studio Fox, who was just coming off the huge success of Star Wars, decided to go ahead and greenlight this project directed by Sir Ridley Scott. The tagline for Alien that time was, "In space, no one can hear you scream."
But we got to go back.
It was called Star
Wars. We got to go back to 1974. Before we go to
let's go back to 1974.
There was a little movie going on at USC from a man named John Carpenter called Dark Star, in which a man named Dan O'Bannon made a movie with John Carpenter called Dark Star, and it was this little comedy set in outer space, and it ended up becoming too popular with some financing and stuff for a college film, so it went from being the biggest budgeted biggest thing on college campus to the crappiest thing playing at your local movie theater. And in that movie, it was a riff on 2001 with some guys in space.
Yeah,
and the alien in the movie, it was this beach ball like that they mocked up or whatever. Yeah. And Dan O'Bannon was like, "Man, I want to make a movie about that beach ball alien, but make it like scary and not like silly or whatnot like that." So he wrote this little treatment for Alien, but I think he called it Star Beast or something at the time.
Yeah, that's what I got right here. Star Beast.
And he gets together with this other friend of his, and everybody, they like the first act. And he's staying on the couch of this one guy, and they come up with this idea. The friend, I forget, producer always wears like a neckerchief thing. It's funny. But he came up with the idea to have the alien, like they wanted to get the alien on the ship.
Yeah.
But they didn't know how without being stupid about it. But they're like, what if the alien, like, plants a seed and gets impregnated in it, and I'm like, oh my gosh, that's great. So they have this kind of script that they're going with, and then Dan O'Bannon gets called to do work on Dune, which is not the dune we know. It's the Alejandro Jodorowsky dune. It's this guy who did El Topo. He was this little indie art house director, and he was making this crazy version of Dune that never got made. There's a great documentary called Jodorowsky's Dune, which is better than the movie Dune, better than the miniseries Dune, and it's probably better than sitting and reading the book Dune. highly recommend it. It's like the best thing about something that never got made. It inspired them to make that Superman Lives documentary Superman movie. So he's over there working on all these storyboards and stuff with this crazy movie, and he meets H.R. Giger over there.
Right.
And they hit it off pretty good. But then the movie gets sacked. Dan O'Bannon comes back to the United States. He's back with his buddy. What's his name? Russ. It's going to haunt me. So they have the script. The Russ guy gets the rights to Total Recall, the Philip K. Dick book. So they're like, well, we can turn Star Beast into a Roger Corman film. He'll buy this. We'll do it. We'll sell this to Roger Corman. Mm-hmm. They get on, and Roger Corman's like, yeah, this is a cheap B movie. We'll do that. So they're going to take, they want to make Alien, get the money from Alien, and make Total Recall as like a real movie.
Yeah.
Well, at the time, the script got to Walter Hill, famed director Walter Hill.
Right.
He likes it. He sends it to his pal, Dan Giler, his writing partner. And Giler's like, this script's shit, dude. What are you, and Walter Hill's like, no, it's crappy, but keep reading. Have you got to the part? And he's like, what do you mean, the part? He's like, just keep reading. And he's like, and he gets the part with the chest burster at the table scene. Yeah. He's like, oh, man. He's like, do we really want to pick this up for that? Like, we'll rewrite it. We'll throw it out. We'll just keep some of those ideas. So they offer up more than Corman and tell them, we're going to make this a real movie rather than Roger Corman. So they bring him on board, start rewriting the crap out of it. They add the cyborg character of Ash to it. Uh-huh. That was their contribution. They changed the names of people. Dan O'Bannon went from screenplay to just story by because they pretty much rewrote the whole thing because they say it sucked.
Including making Sigourney Weaver the lead heroine.
Yeah, it was going to be Dallas. It was an all-male crew in the original script. Yes. It was all-male crew.
Okay.
So they went to put some females in there, and and this movie was sort of just like teetering. They thought Walter Hill would be the director of it.
Mm.
And then Star Wars came out, and the only script at Fox that had space and like thriller and stuff in it was Alien, so it got greenlit right when Star Wars hit big.
Yeah,
and
thank goodness.
And and then they went and they brought Dan O'Bannon brings Giger in for the designs, which they have to fight on. And Dan O'Bannon got to keep a lot of his things because most of the crew thought H.R. Giger was super weird, but Dan O'Bannon was like buddy-buddy with him, so he got to keep a lot of his ideas and stuff because he was the one they're like, you go talk to H.R. Giger.
Yeah.
You go talk to him.
He like already designed the Xenomorph character in the painting.
They pulled it from his book. From his book. They're like, we want this.
I have seen his early drawings.
Necronomicon or something that's what he wrote. But
yeah, Necronom 4.
See, damn it, that's why I have Brandon on the show, because I didn't know nothing about that.
Like, a sponge. Like, do you forget anything when it comes to movies?
I know. I had read, like, bits and pieces. I knew about that Ripley's character was supposed to be male originally, and then they decided to make her female.
Well, they pushed and pushed to have a sex scene and, like, a little, like, bubble on top of the Nostromo, and then, like, have a Bert's dead body float above it.
Oh, my gosh. So weird.
It was, like, super 70s, scene. Yeah. But, but Sigourney and they were like, no, this is dumb. So
we didn't need that.
Necessary.
And actually, Veronica Cartwright came to the set thinking she was Ripley at the time because Sigourney was such a late casting that she had a problem that she'd never read for the other characters, thought she was Ripley. Her agent thought she was Ripley, and they're like, no, you're
surprise.
This was Sigourney's first movie role, wasn't it?
She was she was at the very end of Annie Hall in a faraway street shot standing next to Woody Allen.
That was it. That girl right there, I want her.
The previous year, she was in the Academy Award-winning Best Picture film.
Yeah.
Annie Hall.
Yep.
Straight to Alien.
Briefly.
But she was acting in theater and stuff like that, so she was around. It was just a matter of when.
Well, this movie had basically like an all-star cast at the time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Nancy Cartwright.
Tom Skerritt.
John Hurt.
Which he was replaced. He replaced the guy on the second day of shooting. The first guy they had became like ill. They found out he was diabetic later, but he showed up the first day of shoot, and he's like, and Ridley Scott said he was as yellow as a pencil. Wow. And they're like, dude, are you? He's like just saying his lines, just like, oh, and they're like, dude, are you good? They had to like carry him off the set.
Gosh.
Found out he was like diabetic. So then they brought John Hurt, who they wanted, but wasn't available, was available then.
Yeah, yeah.
And they basically had to sell him on it as hotel. Like, dude, can you just, this is what happens. Can you come? And he's like, all right. They had to pack up and drive him over to the set.
So, of course, you know, the movie, okay, let me just take it to when they land on the planet. And the planet is
LV-426,
yes. they get a distress call. And the mother, the computer's name, mm-hmm. tells them to, like, hey, you need to answer, you know, to respond to this distress call, mm-hmm. land on LV-426. Which we didn't know at the time, watching the movie, that was all like a master plan of the company.
It was not a distress call warning.
And these are just essentially, they're space truckers. That's what basically, they are.
Yeah,
they're
yeah.
not like scientists or anything. No. I mean, they probably have some science background and stuff, but they're just space truckers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Space truckers.
And so they land on the planet, find this ship, you know, and that's where the distress call's from. They go in. And that's basically where all hell breaks loose, you know. That's basically when the movie
all hell
really
doesn't
starts.
Break loose. Some, you know, idiot decides to stick his head in some unknown moving
speaking.
Egg
it's
thing.
Always.
He was just
oh,
speaking.
Something's
he was
moving. Speaking. Let me stick my head in there.
I see your point, but
no buts.
I mean, I have
without
to,
that
know,
guy.
You,
there's
you
no
never,
movie.
That's
never,
true. I get it. That's what was written. But I'm just saying,
it's annoying.
In reality.
And this was the first. I mean, we didn't know this until years and years.
I mean, what if
later.
He doesn't peek over and it pops out, runs over, and then jumps on him? Like,
exactly.
Well, okay, but that. I mean, I get that you can't do anything about it. But I'm just saying, like, he's like sitting there, like, hey guys, there's something moving.
Mm-hmm.
Hey guys, look. Hey guys, I'm gonna stick my head in there.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
He like, didn't like dunk his head. He just looked over to see what was open.
Like you've heard quite on top of it, though.
The thing just
look
opened
at this
up. Yeah,
just
flowered.
Right?
Just it bloomed.
I'm
egg
piss
bloomed.
It off.
But I don't know. I think the opening
mm-hmm.
where they land on the LV-426 mm-hmm. and they're searching around on the ship.
Yeah, yeah.
And they come and just looking around everything. I think it's some of the most like haunting stuff mm-hmm. in like cinematic history. Like,
yeah, that's
the
worst. The
rest
part.
Of the movie's still good, but it's great.
Because
but just the sense of not knowing, but something that's fully like you can tell by the you know. Design crew stuff, something fully realized. It fully looks like something happened.
Yeah.
There's a story that you can put together with your own visuals.
The best thing they did was...
And then you're waiting.
Is when we first see the space jockey.
Mm-hmm.
And you see the hole in his chest.
Yeah.
And he's like, what
Who
the hell happened
that?
Here? Mm-hmm.
When you just don't know what any of this is.
Yeah, yeah.
Right.
You don't know.
Is this? What, it just looks... But it looks so genuine, so lifelike. The design's so great. Like, we'll talk about Prometheus later, but like, it's like I don't need to, and I don't want to know what came before because it's scarier when I'm just like with them and I don't know.
Right.
You know, it's like it's some of the most haunting stuff, and then just like the weird fog and the little laser light.
The fog.
And he's like, when I touched the fog, something happened. It's like, wasn't quite touching the fog.
It kind of moves a little bit. Yeah.
It is. It's like, ooh, there's a host here.
And
yes.
The outside is just this windy mess that's just.
Exactly.
Discomforting, which I'll equate to like, do you remember Interstellar, the McConaughey Nolan?
Yes,
uh-huh.
I love that movie.
Yeah.
I got that same feeling when him and Anne Hathaway and they crashed on that planet with all the water and
mm-hmm.
stuff. It just gave me that same sort of
discomfort.
And like, that's why I like really appreciate some of the stuff in that movie because like it was reminding me of like the alien stuff when you're just, you don't know.
I agree with you. That's one of the things I wrote down was that the effects, they were visually appealing.
Mm-hmm.
And it really drew you in, and it really made the story mm-hmm. visually. So even though they may not have been saying anything, even though, like you said, you may not have known what happened before or why it was there, it still told a story visually.
Mm-hmm.
And
that's film. Like film should be that what it adds is the visual medium.
And it was believing. It wasn't like some fake little ship on a string or whatever. Like
it's not busy. It's not busy.
Right. It was beautiful and effective.
Very. Mm-hmm. That built the franchise. It was like that. Just that opening part right there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it helps the actors when they're actually like really there. Like they. I mean, I'm not against like CGI. CGI's brought us like tremendous things, but sometimes. They want to just they have the ability to overly detail things
mm-hmm.
and make it too busy.
Sometimes practical is always better.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, sometimes like, I'm not against CG, but like sometimes when you go back to when they did it, just like right, it's like you're not gonna match that today at all.
No.
Like no, and it still holds up.
Well,
so let's
let's fast forward a little bit to the scene, the holy shit scene that, you know, that's very memorable with this movie, the chest bursting scene.
Yeah.
Where everybody's
little
at
baby
dinner.
Baby alien. Yeah. He's so cute.
And we're not talking about Spaceballs here.
No. I'm just, I just started singing Spaceballs. Do you want the soup or the special?
We're not talking about that. But this scene was actually, okay. The backstory with this is nobody knew what was going to happen.
They thought it'd be in a different take.
They thought it. Yeah,
they knew the
yeah.
effects.
They
I read that so cool. Cause they wanted
the,
that.
The reaction of Nancy Cartwright. If you mm-hmm. go back and watch this, that's genuine
real
reaction.
that is
really fear on her face.
That's a great idea.
And we all talking about when John Hurt's character gets sick after eating some ramen noodles. It looks like, mm-hmm. and then he starts coughing, and all of a sudden his chest burst open, and then you see the little alien.
Baby
come.
Little baby mm-hmm. babe.
Yeah, baby alien. Mm-hmm. Yeah, come out.
Balian.
Yeah.
And it's one of those scenes in not only sci-fi but horror movie history that makes you say, "Holy shit! Mm-hmm.
Oh,
what
my
is going
God.
On?" You know,
and
that's like the scene that grabbed everyone. Yeah,
that was terrible. That's like you see like the evolution of the alien. It's so fast.
And
the face hugger, then dies,
and then when he gets bigger,
very fast.
The way he blends in with the like a chameleon.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
The way he blends in with the environment.
When you first see him with Bert, and he's just up in the dark. Yeah. He's there the whole time, but
there
like
with the
eyes adjust to see him.
And you're like, oh my God.
Or in the last scene where Ripley thought he got killed the alien, but he is right there underneath all the pipes and everything.
Yeah, he blends in with
blends
all the
in.
Yeah.
But I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Oh no, I was just gonna say. Speaking of the alien, I mean, we were talking about CGI and stuff. Well, that it was a 6'10" man that they found drinking in a pub that ended up playing
really little
the
guy.
Alien.
Yeah, he's super skinny.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like a beanpole, and it, like 900 moving parts in the head of that thing, and then him walking it. So
I tell you,
crazy.
The one scene that scared the mess out of me was when Dallas, where when they're going through the ventilation shafts looking for the alien, and you see and you hear Dallas on his microphone talking, and it's like, go, okay, turn left, okay, close the doors, and it's like, oh my God, he's right behind you, he's right behind you, and then you see the alien out of nowhere, out of the dark, disappear and just grabs after
him. I'm gonna give you a hug.
Oh my God, I watched that as a little kid and I jumped.
Yeah,
literally. That
absolutely.
Scared the mess out of me. And I was like, I'm in love with this movie.
They had at, I just got back from California, so they had the Wax Museum, which we had to do it, of course. And they had a alien, they had the two different stages of the alien, and then they had the alien predator mix.
The Predalien.
The Predalien. Oh, thank you. The Predalien. Okay. They had him, and he had like a face hugger on his shoulder. And
we're going to talk about that
off
later.
Off topic, is Rambo still out front doing pictures?
I did not see Rambo. Okay. I didn't. No,
maybe
I saw.
That guy moved on.
I saw Zach Galifianakis. They're from Hangover. Can't remember what his name is in that movie, but I saw him everywhere. There were like four of them. It was not even Vegas. That was one. But anyway, yeah.
So is there anything else we got to say about the first movie?
It could have been left alone and we'd be fine today.
Really?
Oh my gosh.
Because next comes, honestly, I have to say, one of the best sequels
I
up
love
there.
The second one.
I don't deny it. You take you roll the dice, but Alien is a contained story. That's what I love about it. It's like it's still fine. But
that one on its own.
I don't mind going to Aliens. I'm a fan of the franchise, but I'm saying Alien is a movie that
it could have been left on its own.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Agree.
But leave it to James Cameron to come up with an idea and our story idea to make a sequel to it. And
he was smart. He didn't make the same thing.
Kind of had the same ending.
It's got it's just beefed up. It's
it really beefed up. Mm-hmm. But I mean, this will probably go down as one of the best sequels up there with Godfather 2, up there with Empire Strikes Back. One of the best sequels.
Break into Electric Boogaloo.
There you go.
The movie is baller.
I wasn't expecting that one. But yeah, the Aliens from 1985.
Six.
Six.
Mm-hmm.
1996. Mm-hmm. James Cameron, along with his producing partner. I don't know. Her name is Gillian Hurd. Recognize her name from The Walking Dead. Yeah.
She's she's done so many great things.
Yeah, she's teamed with Cameron on a bunch of movies.
Well, they were married.
Oh, really? Ooh. I didn't know that.
And he left her for Linda Hamilton.
Linda Hamilton.
Who he left for The Woman on the Titanic.
Laura Dern, wasn't it?
No. I don't. She didn't do much other than Titanic, but.
Okay.
The one that dropped the heart.
Jimmy Cameron, the matte painter for Escape from New York. Director, the co-director of Piranha 2.
Oh, look at this, man. Wow.
I know his history quite a bit. And I know most people don't like to work with Jim Cameron. Well, but he's one of those brilliant minds that knows what he wants and isn't stopping until he gets what he wants plus 10%.
That is true, and we'll see that coming with the 20
but you don't doubt
Avatar
him
movies.
Because we all always doubt it. Like, everyone's all like, oh, who wants Avatar sequel? Just wait, see what
oh,
he's got in store for you.
Amazing.
Which basically happened with Aliens, because he's coming straight off of Terminator and doing Aliens.
He did True Lies, and it was way expensive, and I was like, that's never going to make its money back. It made its money back.
Oh, yeah.
It did. He did Titanic. It was like, that's... cost too much
the
money.
Abyss.
It was
the Abyss
was one of his
I
like
the Abyss.
So that I like the Abyss, but like that was one of his lesser ones at the box office and critical. But like T2 cost a ton of money. They're like, you're never gonna make that. Boom, huge. Like, just don't quit doubting the man. Like,
just let him.
Avatar.
Work.
Well, no one's gonna see that. Well, he topped Titanic. Oh
everyone
my gosh.
Saw Avatar, obviously.
Everyone. Mm-hmm. So my 4-year-old loves.
I know. I still love it. Yeah, me too.
So. Aliens. We go back and we find Ripley.
She's been frozen, cryogenically frozen.
And seemingly do not age one bit. So it takes place like 50 years. Is it 50 years?
57.
I believe 57 years after the first alien. She's just floating in space.
And they find her.
And by this time, LV-426 has been colonized. Mm-hmm. You can actually breathe the air and. You don't have to wear a spacesuit, and we have families and everything on that planet.
Families.
Until
beautiful.
Until they get a note to find to go to this special part of the certain part of the.
They lost contact with the colony. Yes. That's what happened.
Okay,
this is a rescue mission.
But but it started with the Newt's family. Going
well,
off.
It was Newt's family. There's the quote unquote director's cut of the film that adds. Like, it's one of the more significant director's cuts. It was something that when I was a kid, younger, like, I always wanted to see the director's cut of Alien. There's these scenes of Newt and her family before everything went down, and there was this, like, railgun scene. There's a scene where Ripley found out she had a daughter that had passed away while she was in cryogenic sleep.
Yeah.
All this stuff, and I was like, oh, man, I got to see this. And finally, with the advent of DVD, that cut became available, and I was like, I finally got to see it. And I was like, oh, yeah, it's awesome. It's better. But the theatrical cut is the way to go. Because, like I said before, what you don't know becomes more haunting. When you don't, when they go into LV-426 and it's just a ghost town, that's far more scarier than when you saw Newt and her family there and you know kind of what happened. When you go there and you don't know, it's far more haunting. The extra scenes are cool for fans. You could go like, oh, it's like extra fan stuff. But, I mean, I think it adds to it not knowing what's there.
Don't
I
start agree. With that.
No.
And the Newt Ripley mother-daughter thing becomes less on the nose with the daughter scene just excised, so...
Now, would you characterize or put this in a put Aliens itself not as horror but as just straight science fiction action?
This informs the action film. Like, it helps with like Commando and other things to inform the action film. You get the one-liners start coming out in Aliens. Some of the you know the types like Predator 2 wanted to be Aliens. Like if you look at the they even brought Bill Paxton. They got Maria Conchita Alonso to fill in that kind of role, but. It informs the modern action movie lot, even though it's sci-fi.
It was.
I wouldn't say horror, definitely.
No,
there's horror. There's sci-fi.
Thriller,
it's a,
maybe.
We're getting in a part where we're like, with the advent of streaming services, we don't have to like just at the video store. It's horror.
Yeah.
You know, now we can like we can tag it with different things. So if you look up under action, you can find Aliens.
You can find
if you sci-fi,
this,
you
comma,
can
this, comma this.
So you don't have to like completely label. So this one is action, horror, sci-fi, just
it's everything.
Thriller, like hybrid.
Don't
suspense.
Put it in a box.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So how do we all like Aliens?
Love it.
Yeah.
I did like Aliens.
I like the
South Park. They kind of make fun of it. I don't know if anybody's a fan of that with the girl. Mostly. They only come out mostly.
Mostly.
Why don't you put her in charge?
Which everybody, it's funny. This is the only movie. Like everybody, you know how in like horror movies and action movies when there's like a kid and everyone's like, Newt always gets the pass.
Yeah. It's like, no big deal. She fine.
It was like, oh.
They recently, I think it was last summer at the San Diego Comic-Con, had the 30th anniversary and had the whole crew up there at the time, including Newt. She's been away from Hollywood since that movie.
She comes back for like every DVD they make, though. Yeah she's...
And they had Cameron up there and everything. It was very, very special moment.
Well, this one also had another casting thing where James Remar was Hicks before Michael Biehn.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, and it just didn't work out. And he was fired. There's pictures like the Blu-ray set was supposed to have the scenes, and then Remar's company didn't sign off on it, and so they announced that they were going to be on there, and then they weren't on there, but. Yeah, so they replace mid-shoot James Remar with Michael Biehn. And also Paul Reiser's in.
Paul Reiser. Yeah.
In Aliens, which is crazy.
Yeah.
Like, that's a weird, because we know him as, like, you know, comedian Paul Reiser.
Who's the villain in the movie.
He's the dick, yeah. And we also get Lance Henriksen.
Yeah.
Bishop. Mm-hmm. And we get, like, all these, like, little characters that you just, like, know. Like, it feeds the stereotypes of, like, the action film. I mean... A lot of the characterization in it is stereotyped and hollow, but it's just like they're lovable, they're fun, and it's just a completely different experience than Alien, which was the smart route to go for Cameron. And
of course, it told the story of how the eggs got there.
It did.
And it introduced the mother queen. The queen
the
alien.
The big mama. Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, that movie is very significant in the franchise.
But it doesn't make up for the fact of Alien 3. Or Hold Alien on. Resurrection.
Well, here's the thing.
When they should have stopped going.
Well, we go to... No, Aliens was such a big hit, they were like, we're making a third one.
Oh, no.
And now we go into development hell.
Yeah.
Because Ridley Scott, they were like, no?
No. We're going to do it anyway. Okay.
So they brought in Rennie Harlan, director of Die Hard 2, Die Harder, Long Kiss Goodnight, Cutthroat Island. Like, he was the... like. I think he's one of the best pure action directors of the 90s.
Nightmare on Elm Street 4.
That was breakout. His breakout was Elm Street 4. They hired him basically because he looked big and like he could go through a hard...
Yeah.
He made this movie called Prison with Viggo Mortensen. Mm. And that was his debut. And that they, you know, New Line was like, throw this guy on here. He keeps showing up at the office and he looks like he's strong and can do a grueling shoot for no money.
Long blonde hair.
He looks good on paper.
And then, Elm Street 4 is this huge hit. He's like on premiere night, like getting like call from Spielberg congratulating him. He's like, okay. So, you know, he gets Die Hard 2 and he gets brought on to Alien 3 and he spends a year in production on it. And he can't crack a code of, like, doing something different. Like, he's like, I don't want to just make the same movie again. Right. And every time he kept going through the motions, it kept winding up being people in corridors, people just, you know, the same thing before. Like, Cameron did it in a way that didn't feel like you were watching the same thing again, but it had a lot of those tropes. So he left the project. They went on a search. They got this Australian director of a movie called The Navigator named Vincent Ward. And I would love to see someone just, like, make an animated movie off his script. Because he had this weird art house vision, and they spent a long time with this guy. He had this vision of, he didn't want to do the movie, and then the more he got talking with the producers, he's like, well, I'm just going to do what I want if they like me that much. He had this idea of like a wooden planet.
Hmm. Really?
A planet just made of all wood that had his...
That's why I have him on the show, man.
These are problems that would lead to his exit. They had like a... It was a planet of monks. And it was they built this planet of wood. It had this minimalist like vibe, like farming and everything, like without technology. They had this fake atmosphere. They had this thing at the center of their core that kept it alive. And then the ship that Ripley was in had the alien on it, and crashed into a lake that's like on the top of this wood planet. And they get her out, and there's an alien in it. It's bursted out of like Hicks, Newt's dead. So they were dead in the early concepts. So all these fanboys that get all upset. But then Ripley comes, and then people start getting picked off by this alien, which these monks believe is the devil, and they believe it's because of Ripley, because it won't touch her because she's got one inside of her. And it's supposed to, and it's these monks, and she ends up sacrificing herself in this, like, there's like Jurassic World stole from this movie. There was a scene with tall grass, wheat fields.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And there was supposed to be a scene where, like, an alien tail, you could see it float around, which is just like the raptor scene.
Yeah.
So they, you know, and Ripley sacrificed herself at the end of this movie. Mm-hmm. And they're like, no, you can't, we want to make more of these. So they do that, and then Sigourney Weaver says, well, I don't want to do the movie. She doesn't die because I'm sick of doing this movie. Yeah, so we went back to her dying, and then they're like, well, why is the planet wood? How does that work? How's the atmosphere? Doesn't they're like, we believe in physics somewhat, you know, logic, and they just they started having arguments, and the director left. So they went on the search again, and they bring up David Fincher. David Fincher.
4 minutes. Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, so David Fincher, who needs, he's a music video director. He's done some Madonna videos, stuff like that. Right. To bring him in, and they got to fix this. And there was always with Renny Harlin, there's this push to have it be like a prison planet. Like all these, like they were obsessed with ex-cons or something like that. So they have already started building sets for this other guy's wooden planet, Alien 3. So they have to use them. They're like knee deep, millions. They even put a release date out. They put a trailer out that said, on Earth, everyone can hear you scream, telling everyone, oh, we're going to Earth. It doesn't happen. And so they were making a movie for a release date rather than making a movie for everything. And so Fincher comes on. And he does his best. He's like, you know what? I'll just nod my head. When I get on set, I'll make the movie I want. He ends up having problems with Fox. There is footage of him, like, cursing Fox and, like, giving middle fingers to the cameraman.
Right.
It's...
Fincher was very... I looked at that movie, and it was very artistic.
Yeah. It very much got his touch to it.
It was a very artistic movie, and I honestly didn't mind
I'm an apologist for Alien 3. I was told...
I liked it.
I was told I wouldn't, you know, yo, don't like this, don't like this. I've always had the assembly cut, which the editor of the film tried to make what he thought. Fincher's never wanted to touch it again. He almost never directed again after this. And he...
I think we're all glad he did, though.
Yeah, we're all glad he did. He went back and tried to make David's vision and put a lot of scenes back in, and it works.
Yeah.
It's all the characters are more developed. Things make more sense. But it's a tragedy. It's like the movie... is supposed to be about a person realizing they can't run anymore.
Right.
They have to face what's up with them. Their whole life has been, their life has been this, like, what life does Ripley have that she's like missed like hundreds of years and stuff like that. And
she has nothing else.
She needs to defeat the company and defeat the alien one, the xenomorph once and for good. And a lot of people got mad because Hicks and Newt died at the beginning. It was such a middle finger. I'm like, what was Newt going to do in this?
Exactly.
You're going to go, okay, well,
Are
we going to have scenes with Ripley and Hicks finding a foster family for her or filling out paperwork to adopt her? Like, it works. I think it works. If you take it on its own, it works. It goes back to the roots of the first one where it's minimalist.
It does. Yes.
It's got great characters like Charles S. Dutton's character. It's just a different dynamic. It's
Charles Dance.
He's
in it. And you know him from Game of Thrones.
Yep. It's got the guy who played Doctor Who one time in that TV movie, Paul McGann. And I think it's Sigourney Weaver's best performance of the entire series.
I liked it. I honestly liked
it. It's a sad movie, and I know no one wants to be in the dumps, but I think it's
not as good as
the first two, but it's a fine capper.
I love the movie.
It's
I love the
capper.
Movie.
But it's got Fincher's style on there.
It is. It's got his fingerprints all over it.
I'll sit through that Fincher movie before I will Benjamin Button ever again.
I will watch. I loved Alien more than I loved the other ones that came out, but we unfortunately don't have a lot of time to talk about those. Well, God, man, we ran long.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
It's a good movie to talk about.
What was it? Alien Resurrection.
They get this art house director.
Prometheus is great. Yeah.
Basically with Alien Resurrection, they want to grab that Aliens vibe again. They get Sigourney Weaver to come back, and they have this. And Joss Whedon writes the Firefly pilot within this.
It was horrible.
And then it's got Michael Winkler. There's enjoyable things. There's aliens of water.
And then we got Alien versus Predator, which was crap.
Blah, 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 blah.
Prometheus loved.
Yes, Prometheus, awesome.
Prometheus was good.
Two thumbs
so, so for everybody who's going out to see Alien Covenant, please check out our Facebook page, leave a comment and everything. And then... we're going to have a review. I'm going to see it this weekend.
Yeah.
I'm going to post it up on Facebook. So for Entertainment Today, I am David.
I'm Liz.
I'm Megan.
My name's Brandon.
Thanks again, Brandon, for joining us.
Thank you.
We will talk to y'all next time.
Bye, guys.
Bye.
Bye, Mom. We'll be right back.